we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the news quiz, back after what I think it's fair to say has been a fairly quiet summer. We start the show with a statement from the New York City Parks Department, read by Zeb Soans.
Our wardens have removed a naked statue of Donald Trump from Union Square. The department stands firmly against any unpermitted erections, no matter how small.
Our thanks to Emma Richards, Michelle Renault, Richard Wall, and everyone else who sent us that American Horror Story. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Lucy Porter. And opposite them, on my left, Kerry Godliman and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who thinks changing the rules should be pointless?
Oh, why, yeah, one of the things we learnt this week is that the Prime Minister has ruled out a points-based immigration system, which is probably just as well, really, because if we did introduce a system whereby people's right to live here was decided by whether or not they make a contribution to society, a lot of us could get deported. Probably most of the audience. Certainly all of the panel. But that was about the only thing we learnt, because elsewhere she just... Mrs May just resorted to her usual mantra of Brexit means Brexit, which is hard to argue with. It doesn't really get you anywhere because, you know, because Brexit is a totally invented, made-up word, isn't it, to describe an as-yet undefined outcome. So, frankly, she might just as well have got up in PMQs and said, Rumbo Flange means Rumbo Flange. She's being deliberately vague, of course, because she doesn't want to set out the terms that she wants to get, because that way no one will know when she doesn't get them. And, of course, you know, it is a valid point that she makes. Her argument is that she's going into a negotiation. She doesn't want to show her hand, which is fine, except that in order to be in a position not to show your hand, you need cards. And you need to be in the room where the game of cards... I can't help feeling that she's possibly overdoing the tactical thing. Because, for instance, I mean, she knows that the arch-Brexiteers are waiting to be betrayed. And so, you know, she's protecting herself because she's deployed Boris Johnson, David Davis and Liam Fox as this sort of three-man human shield. But I think that'll only work in the short term. It only works for as long as they stay in post. And I'm not convinced, for instance, that Boris will last very long as Foreign Secretary. I'm not sure he has the concentration levels. What if a woman walks past? He could so easily lose the Falklands. To answer your question, it was the immigration, the point system.
Yeah, an entrance of an Australian-style point system was what it was always flagged up as. I don't know why anyone would want Australian-style anything, quite frankly.
I thought the point system would be quite good, because if you are queuing to get into Britain, what could prepare you better than being delayed by a points failure further down the line?
You know, when she said she was against a point system, it wasn't because she thought, well, isn't it egregious to arbitrarily sort of designate people as having a particular intrinsic value, as though some people are better than others. It wasn't that. What she was saying is, well, the trouble with the point system is you're inviting people on the basis that they've got something to offer, rather than starting from the assumption that all foreigners are bastards until they can convince you differently.
I don't understand how, in practical terms, her system is that they can't come without a job offer. Is that right?
Her system is we decide. She says that's what the people want, is the British government to decide who can come in, not people just to be able to meet vague criteria. You don't have to tell it why it is. It's, I suppose, a bit like not being allowed to join the Labour Party or whatever. They don't have to give you the sort of reasons that you're one of your emails. We won't tell you which, but you're not
so
coming
it's,
in.
It's just going to be a man in an immigration department going, yep, no, 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 yep, well, maybe, no. It's just going
It'll
to
be that man from the Vicar of Dibley. He will be our new immigration department.
All the people that said, oh, we've got to vote to leave Europe so that we can control who comes in, you just think, you're not going to control it, are you? You're not going to control anything. It's like when people say, well, we're doing all right in the football. No, you're not doing it. You're watching it on the telly.
What have we been up to in France, then?
They're going to build a wall, aren't they, in France? Like Trump's wall, the Great Wall of Calais.
That's right, yeah.
To keep the people from the jungle from trying to get in. Because it's got to be over 2 metres, so if they get over it, they're allowed to stay, because then they can be in Tokyo 2020 Olympics.
But it's just this idea that, oh, well, tear gas hasn't worked, razor wire. We've given the French millions and millions to spend on razor wire. That hasn't worked. You think, look, people have been coming to this country for years and years, and people are saying, well, the trouble is that tunnel. The tunnel was only built, what, 25 years ago? Before, I mean, there used to be 20 miles of sea. Before boats were even invented, people managed to get to this country. You're not going to stop it with a wall. Just got to accept that people are going to come here and welcome it. This time of year, all my friends are saying, oh, don't know what to do now. The last of the kids has gone away to uni. We just don't know what to do. I'll tell you what to do. Get some refugees in their bedrooms before the little buggers try and come back. You let your kids back in their bedrooms, you'll never get shot of them then. You want to get some refugees in there, people with some self-respect who'll build a future and move on, not your children. People talk a load of rubbish. You'll say, well, the trouble is, you'll say, I have every sympathy with these poor people, but Britain is a small island. You think Britain's small? Try getting from Aberystwyth to Lowestoft on a Sunday and then tell me it's a small island.
What else has Theresa May been clamping down on?
All sorts of things.
Anyone want to come forward with a specific answer?
She was at the G20, wasn't she, Theresa? She looked a bit anxious there. She looked like I do when I'm doing a car boot sale selling electrical equipment that I know doesn't work.
My dad used to run jumble sales for the church, and every now and then I used to help him, and the bric-a-brac used to be on the stage, and one lady held up this ancient toaster, and she said, how much for this? And I went, 5p. And she went, does it work? And I said, I don't know, shall I go and plug it in over there? My dad went, no! One thing that happened increasingly as the week went on was that everybody told Britain that they'd have to go at the back of the queue for their trade deal. So by the end of the week, I had this strong mental picture of Theresa May sitting in a waiting room with a ticket in her hand with the number 987 on it and a voice on a tannoy saying, number three.
Peculiarly, this is the news that Britain will not, after all, be introducing an Australian-style points-based immigration system. So apologies to anyone who's already been collecting points. But don't worry, the government say you will still be able to exchange them for a Breville sandwich toaster, an AM or FM radio, or my personal favourite, a delightful set of cut-glass tumblers, each one engraved with a picture of Home Secretary Amber Rudd screaming the words, send them back. Meanwhile, in France, the UK is funding the building of a wall. Exciting news, because apparently the Great Wall of Calais will now be the most racist man-made object visible from space. Apparently, following the Brexit vote, Mrs. May received all sorts of snubs from other foreign leaders. She was forced to stand at the back of the ceremonial photo, and in an unprecedented breach of protocol, the Prime Minister of Italy didn't even try to touch her bottom. Truly, the European project is dead. 2 points to Andy. Lucy, what is the most embarrassing thing that has happened to the Labour Party this week? I should say there are a potential 18 points available for this question.
I'll pick one to start with. Let's go with Keith Faz. Keith Faz stepped down as head of the Home Affairs Select Committee for essentially taking his job title way too literally. But I was thinking, after all the upheaval of Brexit, isn't it? It's so nice to get things back to normal with a good old-fashioned MP sex scandal, isn't it? It's always like the old days. I won't go into the allegations, but you've got to hand it to Keith. It's absolute textbook stuff. Prostitutes, drugs, it's classic sleaze, it really is. And I mean, actually, I do always feel with these things, I don't like talking about them because I do think about how awful it must be for the wife and the kids, although Simon Danchuk is standing by him, which must be a great comfort. But because the whole thing does reek a bit of tabloid entrapment, but there is a public interest justification in that the Home Affairs Select Committee, of which Keith Vaz was chair, is conducting an inquiry into the sex industry, which is like Dracula
working at a blood
bank.
Are we still making sex in this country then?
It's like the film industry. It was better when George Formby was involved. So, yeah, Keith Vaz said he was going to step down because he didn't want to draw attention away from the Labour Party. Personally, I think he should have stayed, because if the one thing the Labour Party needs now, it's someone distracting us from what's going on. I'll move on to another embarrassing thing, which was Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, said he had the full backing of the band UB40. Now, there may be some younger people listening, so for them, I would like to explain. UB40 are a reggae band, and the Labour Party used to be a credible opposition to the Conservatives. Apparently, this incarnation of the band UB40, the ones that have backed Jeremy Corbyn, describe themselves as the most official. There is another version of the band, which is called UB40, featuring Ali Campbell, Astro and Mickey Virtue, which begs the question, when did Alistair Campbell join UB40? But also, what says party unity like getting the backing of half a band after an acrimonious split? I'm just hoping Owen Smith is getting supported by Noel Gallagher, Art Garfunkel and Keisha from the Sugar Babes.
Do you think I could reach out to Keith Vaz? Is that all right?
I think he'd be bang up for it.
If you listed... I do feel there's something that I'd just like to... Keith, if you're listening, can you just come a bit closer to the radio? And the thing is, Keith, you're 59. All right, that's the polite version of 60. And you shouldn't be sending texts that say, let's get this party started. You know, you should be sending texts like, oh, no, Ocado have delivered the wrong kind of chamomile tea. Most people, if they were embarking on a hedonistic double life, would choose to tell people that they were an astronaut or a racing driver. You chose to tell people that you're a man who makes washing machines. Big ones. He did say big ones.
Industrial. The size of this wall.
That's right.
He said, I make washing machines the size of this wall. I've been tempted into bed by less, I'll be honest.
He also, no, it's irresistible. He also chose the name Jim.
But how do we know that he really is Keith Vaz, chairman of the Home Affairs Select Committee? Perhaps
that's
he
true.
Really is Jim the big washing machine salesman. And it's all a clever double bluff. He works for the Stasi. But really, does it matter? I mean, does it matter? I mean, it's upsetting for his wife, but is it anything to do with anything, really? Does it affect
him? Could he have passed it off as research?
Yeah. I mean, so long as he paid the sex workers properly, see, and their papers were in order, I suppose there's nothing...
There's not much he can do. He's got to stand down. It's the right and proper thing to do. shut up!
This is Radio 4. You've
come
got,
on.
This is not...
Popper's jokes, no?
Come on, relax, people. Don't be so tight-arsed about Popper's jokes. In defence of Jeremy Corbyn, I don't know who around him thought, let's get one half of a broken-up band who were famous 35 years ago.
Is he going to do more of it? Because I want to know what Kajagoogoo think of him.
I think he's too shy.
Whose idea will it have been for there to be a press conference rather than to be a tweet?
The trouble is, I think, in the Labour Party, they give you people... It's like the people who said to Ed... build a big gravestone and stand next to it.
Whoever's advising Ken Livingstone to mention Hitler whenever you can.
Extraordinary, isn't he, that? It's just there. You can't get a sentence out with
it. Wasn't it? Because he was on telly trying to defend Keith Baz. I mean, they weren't asking him about Hitler. No. just brought it up apropos of nothing.
Maybe it's his panic phrase.
The thing about Keith is that his intention was to send prostitutes to Israel, and then he went mad and started taking poppers. He's a trouble.
Ken really speaks like that. Nobody's working him. That's his real voice.
Do you think it will have made a sort of spike in the voting figures?
What, UB40?
Yeah.
Will supporting Corbyn?
Well, Owen Smith is now in trouble for being a dirty, horrible, sexist man, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what's
Owen been saying?
Owen Smith is... Is he real, Owen Smith? I don't think he is. I think he's been made in a laboratory out of offcuts of Ed Miliband, Neil Kinnock and Jeremy Clarkson. He's just a sort of composite, slightly shit person.
What's he been saying, Owen?
Well, I'm not sure. He was in a sweet shop and he tweeted a picture of the world's biggest gobstopper and said, "This is what Nicola Sturgeon needs," or something. It wasn't a great tweet. I mean, I'm not sure that it was sexist. If it had been a gobstopper in the shape of his 29-inch penis, then maybe... If you don't know the story about Owen Smith's 29-inch penis, that won't mean anything, but he's got a 29-inch penis.
Lucy, that is not a link to another subject. No. You have to...
See the measurement on trousers? That's waist. That's not... He got into trouble for using the term lunatic, which is just political correctness gone struggling with mental health issues, isn't it?
Lucy, I feel you haven't quite finished talking about Owen Smith. What...
He said he'd like to get hold of Theresa May and give her a slap. He said he'd like to smash her back on her heels. That's quite nasty, isn't it?
I don't get that.
Because her shoes have heels, whereas most people's
shoes have got heels.
I know, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like people going on about Kylie Minogue having a bottom. You think everyone's got a bottom, otherwise they'd fall down the toilet. Or perhaps there are people who haven't got bottoms. We'll get letters from people saying that I've been disrespectful to the bottomless community.
Well, if Owen Smith's 29-inch penis makes it to the Saturday repeat... I am taking the whole family to a harvester. It does sound a bit... Oh, yeah. In my head I was thinking, imagine if your inner leg measurement was shorter than your penis length.
You'd be a pole vaulting Paralympic champion, wouldn't you?
Well, you never see him in shorts, do you?
No.
Glibly, these are the latest travails of the Labour Party, who, after a summer of frenzied disputes, have finally come together over the things they love the most: sexist language, white reggae, and rent boys. Keith Baz has now resigned from his chairmanship of the Home Affairs Committee, and helplines have already been set up to deal with the thousands of teenage girls who now feel life has no meaning. Ken Livingstone came to the aid of Keith Baz, but managed to turn the conversation around to Hitler in record time. In what seems to be his own version of Mornington Crescent. Or as he calls it, Mornington Hitler. Also, after saying he'd like to smash Theresa May and give a gobstopper to Nicola Sturgeon, Owen Smith defended himself from accusations of misogyny, saying he'd got caught up in the heady, un-PC excitement of the BBC's sitcom season. "This leadership contest is playing havoc with my pussy." Commented Shadow Home Secretary Andy Burnham. Two points to Lucy. Kerry, who wants to teach division to our children?
This is that the government are thinking of bringing grammar schools back. Well, they said they're not going to make new grammar schools, they're just going to expand existing ones, possibly up to 200 miles in all directions. It's quite an an emotive subject, because a lot of people say that grammar schools are quite sort of old-fashioned and that we've moved on from that, and the government's mobility czar, Alan Milburn, he said that they're a social mobility disaster, and Michael Wilshaw, the Chief Inspector of Ofsted, he's opposed to grammar schools, but this government seem adamant to bring them back. I think they think that they're... Theresa May said at the moment selection is based on postcodes, and she'd rather it be based on... I don't know, an IQ test, is it? They do. The 11 plus, that's the thing?
The 11 plus?
I didn't do it. My school was not very good, not very academic. They've got Oxbridge mixed up with Uxbridge because it was just quite near the... just on the outskirts of the A40. But it's worrying. It is emotional because, I believe the children are the future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them... them all the beauty they possess inside, Miles, and give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how much we used to be. So, I'm quoting Justine Greening there. She said that today. I don't know. I feel a bit torn about it, because kids went back to school this week, and I was so happy that they went back to school. I mean, that's why I really felt... Because the other news story of this week regarding schools was that a head teacher in Kent sent loads of kids home for not having the right uniform. And I just thought, God, those poor parents that had just got rid of them, and then they... by 9:20. You'd be like, no! You've gone in your school uniform with buckles and Velcro flaps, and that's not allowed in Kent. This teacher sent them all home. Head teacher.
It's his first day in the job.
First day in the job. Old bully at the gate, old Mr. Tate. and he said, no, you're not coming in. 60 kids he sent home.
It's a question of degree, isn't it? I read that story and I thought, well, if a kid has turned up with slightly the wrong shade of grey trousers, then that's obviously pretty harsh. Mm. If, on the other hand, he's turned up sarcastically dressed as a clown, then I think that's fair enough.
It may be that they've done everything they could over the summer holidays to get it absolutely ready, and they just slightly missed the deadline. They've nearly got everything right, and the gates are about to be open. It's 9:00, and someone goes, we could really do with an extra 20 minutes. And you think, oh, I'll think of something. I'll go out there and just say something to them. It'll stall for time. There'll be no consequences as a result of this. And now he's, I don't know, been splashed on most papers and called a Nazi by people other than you-know-who.
It's cool. It was likened to the Gestapo, wasn't it? Which I thought was a bit harsh. You know, the Gestapo, generally speaking, didn't just send people home to come back in the proper kit. That was not one of the things...
They were very uniform conscious,
they were.
But people say, well, the great thing about it is it's a great social leveller because you can't tell the class. You see, everyone...
It's not
you
true,
see, of course it's not true. You can tell by their parents, for one thing, can't you? Their background, their home, things like that.
Yeah. The face tattoo.
Yeah.
You know, our kids have school uniform, and I do. I would prefer it if they were a bit lax with the rules, because if everyone's too similar, it's really hard to recognise your one at the end of school. I have to do like you do at the airport. I tie a ribbon round their arm just so I know.
Grammar school is not really about helping kids from disadvantaged backgrounds. What it's about is it's kind of intellectual organ harvesting, really. They kind of think, we don't want bright kids from disadvantaged backgrounds to become radical and think our society is unjust and unequal and then move to the left. What we've got to do is convince them that society is fair, and if you work hard, and you'll get what you deserve. So really, grammar school is a bit like a big black car pulling up alongside you and two henchmen throwing you into the back, and there's Wilfred Hyde-White saying, ah, we've been following you for some time, admiring your progress. Yes, you're a bright lad, aren't you? It'd be ashamed to see you spending your life in anarcho-syndicalism when you've got a bright future in the Conservative Party. Now do tell, when it comes to strike-breaking, which is more effective, blacklisting or violence on the picket line? Because that's the other thing, is they've got to get the intel. They've got to find out how the poor think so they can oppress them properly. That's why you end up with people like Eric Pickles in the cabinet. So tell us, Eric, what's it like being from the north and poor? Are you black?
A lot of this grammar school fetish is driven by nostalgia, isn't it? Because grammar schools now are very different from the grammar schools of the 60s. I went to a direct grant grammar school in the 60s, and there were kids from all kinds of backgrounds. Whereas now, I mean, if they're really talking about social mobility, they're going to have to retrain a lot of head teachers. Because most modern grammar schools, all they're really interested in is the league tables.
So it's just football teams, really, that get to go to school.
But I mean, I'm all in favour of mixed ability schools, because life is mixed ability, isn't it? I mean, when you leave school and you go into the world of work, you don't find that you exclusively work with bright people, do you?
By
Thank
no
you
means.
Very much.
No,
yeah. Well, I was looking at Miles, but...
Vibrantly, this is the prospect that the government may drop the ban on new grammar schools, a move enthusiastically supported by middle-class parents, right up to the point where they're told that their children aren't intelligent enough to go to a grammar school. There is a rift in the cabinet over this issue. Theresa May is thought to be very much in favour, while Education Secretary Justin Greening is thought to have been sent off to do woodwork. In other education news, police were called to a school in Margate after pupils were sent home for not wearing the correct uniform. Fortunately, the police were wearing the correct uniform. Helmet, badge, jumper, all in blue. They're only in yellow when they're policing away. 2 points to Kerry. Jeremy, who might be moving house?
Oh, the MPs. They're going to move out while they get their bathroom done. They're going to go and stay in a caravan in Vauxhall. Have you been in the Houses of Parliament? It's all manky old, gaudy, red, velvety wallpaper. It's horrible. But, I mean, they're only MPs, you know. They don't need to be free-range, do they? I mean, they just need an office, you know, for a few years. The thing is, it's going to cost a fortune to get them out of there. They'll have to put them... They're saying the House of Lords will go into the QE2 centre. And they said the MPs will have to debate in the Department of Health. But well, I don't know why they can't just work from home. It's going to cost £4 billion to do Parliament up. But the SNP said, you should just turn that into a museum, which it kind of is. But that would be more expensive, because then you've got... If you turn it into a museum, you've got to put all the little labels that nobody reads. Basically, MPs will have to move out while Parliament's done up.
That's logical, though, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be cheaper in the long run. You know, it's better that the MPs move out, because it'll be quicker. You know, it'd be too slow if the builders have to keep stopping every half an hour to fend off sexual advances from MPs.
I'm surprised.
slow it up, no end.
Could they not just tour it? Like any questions, we'll be in today. Yeah. The House of Lords comes to you from the charming market town of Ludlow.
They could go on tour.
Or just do it in school halls, couldn't they? I mean, I would just imagine to get the youth engaged with politics. I mean, when I was a teenager, I would have loved to have seen someone like Norman Lamont live. Because apparently he's absolutely had his best life. Yeah. I mean, that's where you might.
He's massive in Japan, Lamont.
Couldn't they just move Parliament to the headquarters of News International, cut out the middleman?
I do wonder if they do move whether the Labour Party will tell Jeremy Corbyn where they've gone. We've got that Olympic velodrome we're not using. That might be a fun place.
Oh, yeah. So they could just go around it while they're doing it, just because they've got no brakes on the bikes at the velodrome, have they? So they can't, once you're on one of those, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah, Boris would be all right.
Curvaceously, this is the news that MPs may have to move out of the House of Commons for 6 years while the building is refurbished. The House of Lords will also have to move, although even the noise of the construction work is unlikely to disturb the sleep of the Earl Baldwin of Bewdley, who, legend has it, can only be awoken with a kiss. The Lords will be moved to the Queen Elizabeth Conference Centre, which boasts meeting spaces on 7 levels, which, across a 6-year period, will almost certainly finish them all off. Not all MPs are in favour. It may be dilapidated, but the House has a charm all of its own, said one Labour MP while grating asbestos into Jeremy Corbyn's coffee. Two points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Lucy have 4, and so too to Kerry and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Shropshire Star.
Stench from Shropshire biogas site blamed on new employee.
Thanks to Gordon Cruikshank in Wimbledon for kicking up a stink about that piece of reporting. Andy, who wants investors to give him a sporting chance?
Oh, this is Mike Ashley, who owns Sports Direct, which is a sort of shop where young assistants charge around shouting, "I need a seven," into walkie-talkies. And he was trying to convince shareholders and journalists that he'd changed his ways and he'd been wrongly caricatured as some sort of dodgy Victorian-style employer. He took the cameras on a tour of his warehouse and he insisted that the security man subject him to exactly the same kind of search as the employees had been having. So he turned out his pockets and they were absolutely full of wads of £50 notes. He never explained where the cash came from. I don't know.
He said he'd been to the casino.
Did he?
Yeah.
I thought maybe he'd sold some orphans or something. Anyway, so it was an epic PR disaster. He also came out with my favourite quote of the week, which he said, "Well, the right hand did everything right, but the left hand was doing everything wrong," which is a wonderful premise for a horror movie, isn't it? His left hand was evil. Only the right could stop it. But anyway, he seemed very hurt, and he pleaded for time. He says, "Give it a year. He's going to turn the company into John Lewis." And he says, "In the future, they will definitely let staff go to the toilet, and he may even install a toilet."
He does seem genuinely conflicted, though. It's like his conscience is telling him stuff, but he doesn't realise that he's actually saying his internal dialogue out loud. As he'll be saying, "Well, if I were to ask myself, am I the best employer in the world? I would probably say, no, Mike, we are not the best employer in the world. Which one of us is talking now?" And I would say, "No, I'm not Father Christmas." And then I would say back to myself, "No, Mike, you are not Father Christmas. I'm Father Christmas, you're Mike Ashley. Who are we now, Mike?"
It's basically a Cockney golem, isn't it? That's
upset that he got a big wad of £50 notes out of it. I kind of thought, well, what do you expect him to get out of his pocket? A flute? I mean, he's going to... He's a multi-billionaire. He doesn't give a toss of who knows it, and he's got a big wad of cash in his pocket.
It's the £50 notes. If it was a wad of notes, I think £50 notes, that's...
It was a bit odd, and when the journalist shouted out, "That's a lot of cash there," he was like, "Yeah, just been down the casino, don't print that," while he's on 20 cameras. Strange.
I still get really excited if I see a £50 note. I would have, if I was there, I would just go, "Oh my God!
Are they real?" I just throw them away. I just thought that they weren't.
Deciduously, this is the state of affairs at Sports Direct, where CEO and Scotch egg that has seen better days, Mike Ashley, is battling to retain the confidence of shareholders. Ashley visited his company's Sharbrook warehouse and, during a routine search procedure, produced a huge wad of £50 notes from his back pocket. This might have caused some distrust amongst the watching workers, but Ashley explained he'd been to the casino and his credentials as a man of the people were instantly restored. Lucky he wasn't wearing his other trousers, which contained the severed hands of agency staff that had arrived 1 minute late. On the plus side, Mike Ashley has now got rid of zero-hours contracts. I suppose everyone has their good points. Apparently Hitler was very fond of dogs. Our thanks to Ken Livingston for sending that way. Two points to Andy. Kerry, have a listen to this. Kerry, dry your tears and answer me this. Who, it turns out, is unable to climb every mountain?
There was a whole campaign in Wales that 2016 was the year of adventure. This was all fronted by Bear Grylls and extreme athlete Richard Parkes. And then it's led to a surge in under-preparation and unskilled climbers calling out the rescue. So we said a surge. Last year, there were 34 call-outs, and this year there were 43. Is that a surge? There might be better phone reception up there this year, so you can actually get a hold of people. I'm stuck. I wore flip-flops.
What's weird with British people is when we're going to do something like climb K2 or try to, like, contain an insurgency in Helmand province, we are completely unprepared, and yet people get really kitted up to go for a walk. You see people on a towpath, they've got special boots and special socks. Not those, these aren't ordinary socks, these are walking socks. I couldn't walk at all until I got these walking socks. And they've got special shorts with a special pocket to put in one of those things for building an igloo in case an ice age strikes when they're trying to get over a stile. And they've got those bloody ski sticks. It is flat and there's no ice. Why have you got ski sticks? All you're doing is walking along. You don't need to change into your superhero outfit to do that.
Well, they weren't. They weren't doing that in Wales.
No,
they didn't have the gear.
And they went up Snowdon walking, not realising that there's a very nice train service that goes up. What it is, all this challenge stuff is based on this idea that basically people in Britain, most people in global terms, have a relatively safe and comfortable life. And rather than think, that's brilliant, we don't have volcanoes, we don't have earthquakes, we don't have famines, they think, our life's too comfortable, let's have a challenge. Either, if you want a challenge in Wales, try and have a civilised meal on a Friday night in Swansea. Bear, that's not your name, Bear, is it, Bear? Your name is not Bear. That was
my nickname when I was a little boy. Apparently I looked like a bear when I was little, and my sister called me Bear. It kind of stuck, and everybody called,
bloody grow up, you're a man! You're a man, you're not a bear, grow up!
Mel B had to urinate on him this week.
Good!
He got stung by a jellyfish and she said, I'll urinate on you.
On the wound?
Did she do it in the wound, cup or did it straight on?
Just straight on. Like,
Keith Fans would probably pay for that.
She really struggled because she said, when you're on national television trying to have a wee, you wouldn't urinate on Bear Grylls just anyway.
I would.
I would, like in a well-funded arts centre.
It's like nettles. Nettles are alkaline, so you put lemon juice, vinegar or whey on them.
Doesn't dock leaves work?
Dock leaves do work, yeah. But you've got to hang around the docks for years.
Oh, it sounds like quite a life.
There's been loads of mountains in the news. There was another mountain scoop.
That is absolutely right.
Yeah, a Cumbrian hill has now got mountain status, which is really exciting. All the other hills are really irritating about it.
It was called Calf Top.
Did they just dig away the ground around it to make it look taller?
No, they said it hasn't grown. It was something Ordnance Survey said it was better measuring equipment. Before, it was only 2 millimetres shy of having mountain status.
Six millimetres.
No.
OK. Fine.
I've got 3/4 of an inch here.
Have you?
I have a fact about Calf Top. Geodetic analyst Mark Greaves said the peak appeared to be very, very close to being a mountain, but about 3/4 of an inch too low. Which I just thought that those sort of measurements do make all the difference, because my husband is just a few inches off being classified as a giant. So currently I'm living the life of a suburban housewife, but, you know, a couple of inches I'm living the life of a trapped princess.
With mountain status, is it how high above sea level it is or how high it is off the ground? Sea level. OK, so if, like, it was a little hillock, but it was somewhere that was really high up, that would be a mountain.
Like on a mountain? You haven't thought this through, Jeremy, have you? If it's really high up... Well, you mean on a plateau?
Yeah, what if a plateau was, like, 1 million miles up in the air...
Yeah.
..but it wasn't officially a mountain, and then there was a little tiny molehill there, that would be a mountain.
Like, every hill in La Paz, wherever, is actually... Even, like, you go, just walked up a mountain because you're already so high above sea level.
I don't understand.
See, this is what I mean about the value of mixed ability classes.
Seraphically, this is the news that rescue groups in Snowdonia say a surge in underprepared walkers has led to a sharp increase in the number of people requiring mountain rescue. Once again, mountain rescue brazenly standing in the way of natural selection. The Welsh Tourism Board has called 2016 the year of adventure, something certainly taken to heart by Keith Faz. When asked for his opinion, Kent Livingstone said, I cannot overstate the importance of wearing stout walking boots. Tell you who else wore stout walking boots. Hitler, 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 Hitler. 2 points to Kerry. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
I've got Stuart Knight in Appleby read this in The Sun. The former home of one of New York's most notorious mafia bosses, Albert Anastasia, is up for sale. The property's not changed in decades, although Anastasia himself has not lived there since his murder in 1957.
Lucy.
So this, from the BBC website, was sent in by Matthew Collins, Gary Banks, Peter Hobden and many more. Hybrid Air Vehicles have denied a report that their airship test flight has been a failure. The flight went really well and the only issue was when it landed.
Kerry.
This was sent in by Kit McCarthy, saw this sign at Bell Baxter High School. It was a refuge action sign. In the event of fire, this refuge provides fire and smoke protection for approximately 10 minutes. The evacuation plan in operation within these premises ensures that assistance will arrive at this point within 11 minutes.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Ian Wilson, who's the head teacher of St Margaret Lee Primary School in Lewisham. And it's advice from the police. Please collect your child from St Margaret's Church as we are evacuating the school as a precaution. There has been an unexploded bomb found opposite Mr Wilson.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Kerry and Jeremy have 8, but this week's winners are Andy and Lucy with 9. Oh. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Age newspaper sent in by Felix Parker in Sydney.
Police seek hardened criminal after penis pump is stolen from sex shop.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Lucy Porter, Kerry Godliman and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Gareth Gwynn, James Kettle and Gráinne Maguire, with additional material by Dan Hooper and Liam Byrne. The producer was Paul Sheehan and it was a BBC Studios production.